This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean and surrounding counties. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with the guest, Father Patrick G., and Father Patrick is from India. He's visiting the United States, and he was attending a theological conference at Princeton University. He has visited the Twin Cities to visit one of his relatives here, Jerry. And so he was good enough to stop in this morning and talk with us, and we're going to have a great show for you people out there, because Father Patrick has a lot of things to talk about, his ministry in India. But first of all, I'd like to do a little bit of personal background, why Father is here, and some of the things that got him into the priesthood, how he came at his vocation. So I'm going to turn it over to Father Patrick at this point and let him tell us a little bit about himself and his family and how he came to be a priest. And he is a diocesan priest in India, and we'll go from there. So go ahead, Father, and let us know.
Good morning. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Thank you for inviting me to be here.
Well, we're very, very glad to have you here, Father.
Thank you.
It was a gift to us. Enjoy it.
It's a good opportunity for me to share my views about my vocation, my ministry with the listeners to this radio.
How did you... What brought you into the priesthood? Was your family? Are you a cradle Catholic? Was your family Catholic?
I hail from a rural area in India, southern India. My dad used to be a farmer involved in agriculture and not literate. And my mother was a housewife. However, my father had some wisdom to send his children to school. That itself was a new direction to the children in a family which is otherwise occupied with agriculture. And we are actually six brothers and sisters. Two boys died and four are actually now surviving. The first one, the eldest one, used to be a teacher in a public school. And she chose the occasion to be a nun in the Missionaries of Charity of Mother Teresa of Kolkata. And that sister used to be my inspiration. She was given the opportunity to, first of all, educate herself in our family. And her orientation in life, the spiritual orientation that was there in her life, was an inspiration to me. Now, I should also go a step further and say that my mother herself was a very devoted and pious woman who always saw that we attended the church. And I used to be an altar boy when I was a boy, an altar boy, and that gave me a lot of enthusiasm. And when looking at the Catholic priests of that time and their dedication, I thought I should become a priest. God works through human persons, and the priests were my models. So I joined the seminary to become a priest, a seminary belonging to the Diocese of Kota, which is the southernmost diocese in India. If ever you come to India, you can always locate us at the tip of India, southern tip of India. And I joined that diocese and did my theological studies in a well-known theological seminary situated in Pune. And then I was ordained in 1987 as priest. By the time my eldest sister had become a nun, and she was already doing her theology program in Rome, Regina Mundi. And she herself had the ability to go for higher studies, and she did her theological studies here. And then she was sent to United States to serve in different states. She was here in the United States. She was also in Africa. Anyway, coming back to my occasion, I was ordained in 1987. Then I served in the Diocese of Kota for about 7 years on various capacities.
Were you a parish priest?
Yeah, for say 1 or 2 years, I was assistant, and 1 year a prefect in a seminary, and then 2 years parish priest in a particular parish, a rural parish there. Then my bishop sent me for higher studies. Very interestingly, those days there were candidates who were looking forward to opportunities outside of India to go abroad to do their higher studies. But somehow I thought I should do my studies in India itself. So I looked for opportunities to do my studies in India, studies meaning theological studies, higher studies. And it was wonderful to find that there was a Department of Christian Studies established at the University of Madras in the year 1984 by the Archdiocese of Madras Mylapore. It is well-known Catholic Archdiocese. They had taken initiative to institute this department in a secular university. It is something out of the way, out of the box for Indians to have a department at the University of Madras. So, as I shared this with the faithful yesterday in the Mass, India has about 780 universities. But then, only about 5 universities have either a chair or a department in Christian studies. So, ours was something singular in the sense we, in this department, ran many programs which other departments or chairs did not do. So I got an opportunity to do my research degrees at this department. I did my MPhil there. Then I did my PhD in a theme related to religion and theology. Religion, especially religion of the people. I always had a desire to study the religion of the people, the symbol faith of the people. How does that, first of all, come about? How does it sustain people? How faith works in the lives of the ordinary simple people? That's my kind of interest. So I studied about a particular religious phenomenon that arose during the 19th century, which had empowered the people of that area. So I was trying to find the connection between Christianity and this particular religious phenomenon. So anyway, I did my research degree and submitted and got my PhD award in the year 2001. Then went back to my diocese of Kota to do my ministry, and the bishop had appointed me to be a director of a folk cultural center, which was performing arts to evangelize. So I was very happy to be a director of that folk cultural group for a year. Then my own teacher at the University of Madras, who was my supervisor, who is a well-known theologian by name Felix Wilfred, he called me back to teach at the Department of Christian Studies. So I went back to the Department of Christian Studies to teach. And from the year 2002, I am there at the department.
You mentioned, the idea of studying religion and how it affects and empowers people. What were some of your conclusions from that study, Father?
This particular religious phenomenon, which was not typically Christian phenomenon, which was of the people, ordinary people, had a mystic as the founder of this religious phenomenon. Now, this mystic certainly was influenced by various religious traditions, and Christianity being an important one at that. So my conclusion was that genuine souls always search for new ways of experiencing God, which would also empower them in their present life.
Do you feel that's a strength of the Christian faith, that it has been able in its past and currently, even now, I'm sure, to draw so much from other religions and synthesize it and pick out that which is good and workable and, you know, and godly in a Christian sense.
Right.
Whereas sometimes maybe some other religions are not able to do that as well.
Right. Christianity has played a very, very unique role in the Indian context. rather than, you know, drawing in, it has given out. It has gone forth to be a very deep layers of, or let us say, deep inspirations in the lives of the people across religions. So that is actually a strength of Christianity, that it does not stay within its own boundaries. It goes forth beyond its own boundary to inspire other people.
You've studied, you know, in India and also in the West, in, you know, what I call the West, in the United States, in Europe. Do you find that the secular culture, that there is becoming a division? Maybe it's a problem over there too. I don't know. The secularization of our societies is taking some of that strength away?
That used to be one of the contentions of Western scholars or Western theologians, that secularism or secularization as a process has taken its toll on the faith of the people, especially in the European context. But it is something different in the Indian or Asian context. First of all, there has not been a very severe, rigorous process of secularization happening in India or in Asia. India has a unique, model of our history of staying with its religiosity even when they modernize themselves. It is not either or. Give up this to be religious. They are religious. They can also be modern and secular in that sense. So secularism in the Indian context has a different meaning, not as anti-religious, but more as a meaning of, say, listening to the other, being interreligious, dialogical, and things like that. So, in the Indian context now, there is some problem for secularism. Not so much because of the development of secularization, but because of a political will to use religion for their narrow ends. So some parties or some forces are actually organizing like that. And that has been a challenge to minority religious traditions, especially to Christianity as well. So a majoritarian force is trying to kind of, impose itself, which is a challenge for minority religious traditions like Christianity. But that does not kind of make us, desperate or kind of discouraged.
How do you see the problem of secularization in the United States and America when you come here? Do you see this? You might see it from a different perspective than we do. Do you see it here as a problem for our culture, or how do you see it? Is there too much?
If you ask my personal experience, I have one type of answer. And if you ask me about my perspectives, my intellectual perspectives, it's slightly different. Now, personal experience, I have been frequenting Europe and U.S. several times. I taught a course, as I told you, in the Harvard University Divinity School on a topic called public religion in India and America. So I have some experience of USA and Europe. This experience of mine has been very pleasant. I don't see any kind of, antipathy to religion, animosity between religious groups in my personal experience, because wherever I go, there are religious centers. So therefore, I don't have any experience of antipathy. However, I've also read, I've also researched upon the way religion works in the West, wherein in some countries, indifference to religion is higher. In some countries, it is not that higher. Say, for example, America is a good model where religion and secularism both can go hand in hand. While if you go to France, it is a very extreme case. Secularism is at its height. So there are variations within the West itself, Now, one of the contentions of some of the well-known Western scholars is that West has kind of become rather, say, indifferent to religion and thereby also lost the capacity for faith in God because of its overly secularized ethos. This is one of the views presented by scholars today. So therefore they say that the public square has become naked, devoid of faith, devoid of an experience of transcendence. You see? Now, you don't find this kind of experience in India or Asia. Probably there is a kind of a saturation point there in terms of religious practice and beliefs. It is there always. You see? There you do well to finally demarcate spaces for religion and, say, politics or state, so that everybody enjoys equality, everybody enjoys civil rights and the, you know, things like that in the Indian context. It's slightly different from the European context, you see. So, but I'm happy that some of the public theologians in the West are now pointing out to this development of what we call the public naked sphere, in which we need to introduce more and more of religious practices, which can also cultivate faith.
Yeah, I've talked about that on my show various times. I think it's because the United States was de facto Christian, even the government, when it was first formed. I mean, it took Christianity for granted, but it was never Christian de jure by law. And there's that huge emphasis on the separation of church and state. Right. And I think the secularists have used that as to try and drive a wedge, mm-hmm. and to try and somehow keep the public square, you know, keep religion out of the public square. Mm-hmm. And it's gone too far. There's too great of an extent. And, you know, my contention always was, you might want to comment on this, was that, you know, there really is no such thing as a government or any society that is not based on some kind of religious principles, and you have to decide which are those principles going to be. I mean, anyway, so as soon as man, you know, says something is good or something is bad, he's acting religiously, because that doesn't occur in nature. Would you agree with that, Father?
That's one of the standpoints of a well-known theologian. You must have heard about John Milbank.
Yes.
So that is his position, that there was no secularity once. That is his point. Everything is in terms of different points of view, different traditions, different faith elements, you see. That's the only possibility for human beings, you see. So how do we live together? That's an important point, you see, or concern. Being dialogical in the context of different religions and having a concern for common good, I think will be a good solution for countries like us, I mean, in the West. So, not go away from religions, but live your religious traditions in a dialogical way. Dialogue with the others in terms of a common good. So, I think that will actually take us, towards our higher goals. Yes.
Yeah, I hope so. Yes. We're going to go ahead and take a break here, and then we'll come back. So stay with us. We're going to take a break. We're having a really interesting conversation with Father Patrick G. from India. So we'll be right back. We'll see you in a minute.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
If you know someone who would prefer listening to Catholic Spirit Radio in Spanish, tell them about the free Spanish app for smartphones and tablets. Also, the Listen Live Spanish button on CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
Si sabes de alguien que prefiere escuchar Catholic Spirit Radio en español, diles que hay una app gratuito en español para smartphones y tablets. También está en internet en CatholicSpiritRadio.com. En el botón Listen Live Spanish.
Catholic Spirit Radio was created for you to grow. Therefore, your participation, your prayers, and your financial support are welcome.
Catholic Spirit Radio fue creada para ti. Por lo tanto, tu participación, tus oraciones, y tu ayuda económica siempre son bienvenidas.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM. And we're talking with Father Patrick G. from India. And we've had a great conversation in the first part of our show and talked about a number of topics. Father Patrick wants to talk a little bit more about his vocational calling and experience. And so I'm going to turn that back to Father and let him talk a little bit about that topic.
Yeah. I am a diocesan priest. Generally, the pastoral work of a diocesan priest is in a parish, taking care of pastoral work. However, I got a vocation to do a different work, to be in a different field, in a teaching field, and that too at the State University of Madras, which is beyond the Catholic diocesan, say, borders. Now, being there brings up a lot of challenges and opportunities. What do I do? How do I nourish my occasion in being being a university teacher? As I told you earlier, this Department of Christian Studies is one among the very few in the Indian context. While in the West, almost all universities have either a department for religion or theology. So it is a different experience for us in India. Now, being there, I get an opportunity to meet with people of other religions, people of no religion, and the general public in the state university. And how do we bear witness to Christian faith in that context is something challenging as well as filled with a lot of opportunities. Christianity in the Indian context, as I mentioned earlier, has played a very unique role. And Catholic Church in particular has played a very unique role and continues to play even until this day. What would be the exact uniqueness? I, for one, would say the way it brought about social transformation in the Indian society is something unique, social transformation. You all must be knowing that India alone has this problem called the caste system. There are many voices. On the one hand, you have voices who say caste system is the best form of social organization to keep people in their place and still have a society and things like that. On the other hand, especially the lowly, the marginalized people who always have a grievance because it has been against them, it has oppressed them. So therefore, they want to get rid of this caste system. Now, in this context, Christianity in general has contributed to the empowerment of the marginalized people in various ways, with education, with medical care, with certain economic upliftment, and a sense of individuality, being the image and likeness of God. So all these have played a role in empowering the subaltern people. So Christianity is counted among the subalterns in Indian context. So being a Christian in India means being counted among the lowly, socially speaking. Now, being in that community, how can we contribute to the empowerment of the marginalized people as well as for the general well-being of humanity in the Indian context is a challenge today. Especially against contemporary challenges like, say, what they call fundamentalism, majoritarian communalism, and several other weird religious practices and things like that. How do we contribute? I, for one, have a belief and a conviction that studying religion in a systematic manner in a university setting, in the company of other religious departments, in the company of other disciplines, secular disciplines, would be a fine way of studying our tradition as well as other traditions in themselves as they are originating with their own spontaneous energies, creativity, power and things like that. So, being there in the secular arena gives me opportunity to study. Also, teach Christianity to others in the right light. Not as something which is practiced within our own borders, but which is relevant for everybody. As a liberating force. As a religion that calls people to a transcendental experience of God. So, this opportunity, I feel, is something that is sustaining me in the secular arena, though I'm not a pastor of a particular parish. This opportunity is not given to many priests of our Indian Catholic Church. Among the very few, I got this opportunity to be there. And our lifestyle itself is a witness to others in the secular arena. And our openness to others, to dialogue with others, to bring them together on a common platform for common purposes, like, for example, to nurture the quality of democracy in the Indian context. These are all very singular opportunities I'm getting there in the secular university. I'm very happy about it. I continue to write. I continue to publish. I continue to attend conferences worldwide, and then within India as well, and contribute my mite to spreading the essence or the ideal of the Christian faith.
Is there ever any problem in actually, you know, evangelization, direct evangelization, whereby people of other religions or beliefs or whatever would look upon that as being proselytizing or being, you know, too aggressive, or is there any, you know, any pushback on that, in your opinion?
Yeah. In the recent past, there have been instances where Christians in India are facing such difficulties, being branded as pushing the agenda of conversion too hard and being branded as proselytes. Now, India has been resisting what we call conversion in that sense at the top level and at the bottom level as well. One of the leading figures in the Indian context, Mahatma Gandhi, had difficulties with conversion. And he found it meaningless. One should grow in one's own faith, that's what he said. But there was another leader from the subaltern masses. You must have heard about a name called Ambedkar. I would like to specially mention his name. Dr. Ambedkar, who was one of the architects of Indian Constitution. He said, conversion is my right. I am born in this particular religious tradition. I will not die in this. Of course, he did not convert to Christianity, but he defended the right of conversion within the democratic framework. Now, what is happening in contemporary context is that democratic right to choose one's religion, that is being kind of challenged by the unseeming and unmeaning activities that are taking place at the grassroots. There are forces emerging, being kind of fed by ideologies and other things, which are in some parts of India working against, you know, conversions and other things.
Would the caste system have any bearing on that? The idea of, you know, the imago Dei, the image of God, you know, which is a revolutionary concept in the world, would that have an effect on it? Because people may be, you know, resisting a change to, you know, the caste system, and then they see Christianity as a particular religion that helps break it down. And so, therefore, they use the idea of proselytization and so forth to try and push back.
Certainly. That exactly is the point. In generally, it is treated as a subtext of the discourse of conversion. Conversion is resisted not on account of the religious experience alone. It is being resisted or challenged also on account of, or mainly on account of, the kind of social challenge that it is posing to the particular kind of society that India is, which is characterized by caste. So, Christianity, at least in its initial phase, churned the Indian society and brought about a new ideal of being egalitarian. So, on that account, I must say that different denominations of Christianity had contributed significantly in their own way to churn the Indian society, to challenge the caste system. Catholic Church had its own faults as well as strengths. Protestant churches also, they had their contribution, fine contributions. So, the net effect was, or net result was, a kind of a real challenge on the caste system. However, I must note at this point that there is also a critique which says this religion, which had changed the Indian society and challenged the caste system, has in some way also imbibed the caste system in its own body. So, it is unfortunate that Indian Christianity is also suffering from certain level of caste discriminatory practices. So therefore, it is not completely free of, though in terms of principle it is free, but in terms of practice it is not free. So now the challenges are, two-faced. One is to challenge Christianity within itself to purify itself as of the caste system. The other is make Christianity as a catalyst to purify the wider Indian society of its caste system or caste prejudices and practices. And in this context, conversion certainly has a merging element, or it has connotations of this change that is a subtext. So when they attack conversion practice, it also simultaneously means that they are resisting the changes taking place in the caste system.
And I'm sure, you know, the Catholic Church has always emphasized, you know, I think one of the greatest devices that it devised was the parish system. Mm-hmm. And it always emphasized that everybody in a particular parish, you know, they go to that church.
Right.
So that all peoples, when they were sitting in that church, were meeting shoulder to shoulder, whether they were rich or poor, you know, or well-educated or ill-educated.
Right.
And I think it still, to a certain extent, emphasizes that. But there's more of a tendency in America, I see now, for people to church shop. And that sort of, you know, maybe works against that. And, you know, and that was the whole idea, was to bring people of all different types together, saying you're all children of God. You know, you're all made in God's image.
Right.
And in sitting inside this church, there's no higher or lower.
Right.
And I think we really need maybe all over for the church to emphasize that again.
Right. You have finely captured an important aspect of being Christian there in the Indian context. Very finely you have captured that. You see, being there in a community, shoulder to shoulder, on equality, all these things are the fine, what we call elements of Christianity, its culture and its faith and things like that. Thank you. However, in history, it has not happened that way in the Indian context. If you were to go back to history, there were also church buildings constructed in such a way that some spaces were allotted for the lowly caste and the main portion is allotted for the higher caste. And when some missionaries and pastors challenged this, they were thrown out. A lot of big riots. So this is also the history of Christianity in India. Even now, see, one apparent very, what we call a common kind of site that you see is that church building constructed on the model of a cross. Mm-hmm. Fine. So you may say that it is a witness. It's a symbol. But then that has served to keep people separate. You understand? So such things are there. They have been there. Now you don't find them so visibly. But then when it comes to real mingling, it does not take place. Say, for example, people cannot, even Catholics do not marry between castes. So in that sense, caste becomes thicker than religion. You see, it is there. Now, however, what you finally captured, the ideal, is there with Christianity. Let us be a new community of equals. Okay. Now, this new trend of picking up, shopping for, you know, religion, has its positive as well as negative as well. As you said, it may not give us that opportunity to sit together and, you know, even challenge one another on par with, you know, on the basis of equality. But on the other hand, it is giving certain freedom to some individuals to get out of this oppressive caste system and, you know, practice the religion as they want. So, in some sense, there is a freedom. In another sense, there is also a limitation.
It's a step. Yeah. And, of course, human beings are all social creatures. Human beings are social creatures.
Right.
There will always be some social status. You know, we all like to be with the kind of people we're used to being with.
Right.
And there's a tendency to be hesitant, you know, to engage with someone that's too different.
Right.
And so it takes time.
Right.
And I think the church has always understood that there's the ideal and then the fact that this is a broken world.
Right.
And the ideal isn't always workable immediately. Sometimes it takes time.
Right.
I think that's one of the things.
We're
going to go ahead and take a break. Stay with us. This is a wonderful conversation we're having with Father Patrick G. from India, and we're getting a lot of insights as to his priesthood, as well as to some of the differences between Christianity, Catholicism in India and here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Mother Teresa, too. You can comment on her and if she's been getting, maybe she had been getting during her vocation, pressure because she was working with people of a, you know, very lower what we would say caste in India, but a lower class, we'd say, in America. So we'll come back to that. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM. And we've been talking with Father Patrick G. from India, and it's been a wonderful conversation of his experience in becoming a priest and also his ministry in India and what he's been called to do by his diocese there and his bishop and the problems and challenges, some of the trends in India. We talked a little bit about the caste system. I do want to ask him as a specific example of the problems with social strata, did Mother Teresa experience some pushback, some opposition to the fact that she ministered to the destitute, the very lowest of the low? And I had heard that there was some, and I just wondered if you could comment on that, Father.
Yeah. I'm very happy to speak about the ministry of Mother Teresa for various reasons. One is very personal. I told you earlier that my eldest sister is a nun, now serving. Missionaries of Charity of Mother Teresa. And the vocation that she had was something interesting. My sister was a teacher in a secular school for about 9 years. And in our family, she was the first one to get educated and get an employment. Perhaps not only in our family, in our village itself. Now, she taught for about 9 years. Then she got her call. Now, something like what do you call a call within a call? She was already a teacher out there, now receiving a call to join the Society of Mother Teresa. And it was a time when it was coming up. The society was in its initial stage. It was coming up. And the way my sister could kind of leave behind her securities to take up to this simple life, that was something very inspiring for me. Mother Teresa too did the same. She left behind a lot of securities, securities that her country gave, country of origin gave, and security of the convent that she lived in gave her, and got a call within a call to go out to serve wider. I think that is the journey of faith. So in my own family, I have an example of that. So I want to really speak about Mother Teresa's role from a personal perspective in that sense. I appreciate that. Now, secondly, Mother Teresa was the one who inaugurated our department officially at the University of Madras. She came over in the year 1996 and officially inaugurated the Department of Christian Studies at the University of Madras. I was there, a student. So that moment was very poignant for me. I was there near her, and even otherwise I used to get greeting cards from Mother Teresa through my sister, wishing me every Christmas, you know, because she always had respect for priests. So I have some of the cards even now with me. Now, when she came to our university, the experience that I had there was something very, very unique. University of Madras is a secular university. Majority are non-Christians, especially, you know, from other religious traditions, what they call now as Hinduism and, of course, Islam. Going beyond all these religions, when she came to our campus, the entire university, teaching and non-teaching faculties, were at her feet. They all came out just to have a darshan, a vision of her, or even an opportunity to touch her. That was something new. Wow. So she had an appeal and a charisma beyond the so-called our religion only.
Beyond this world.
Beyond this world, beyond our borders, narrow-mindedness and things like that. So in that sense, India always took to her in a big way across religions. Even now, we have lessons on her in our textbooks. Our people are happy to study about her. Our people are happy to speak about her in public. The children know about her work. Mother Teresa is always extolled as a model. So there is something that which others cannot do, which is there in Mother Teresa, based on her vocation, based on her faith. She always used to say, "But for Jesus, I would not do this." Now, the kind of work that she did was something unthinkable to others. The way she could go near to the destitutes and treat them as wanted. The destitutes who were thrown out, especially in Calcutta streets. If you have been to Calcutta, you will know it is a very, very low degree of human existence. Roads dirty, and, especially in the winter season, it's cold and things like that. Destitutes are simply in rags. So one would not actually dare go in here with them. But Mother Teresa could go. What gave her strength was her faith. Go near to, say, for example, a patient of leprosy and, wash her, wash that person, and say that even if the person is dying, there is some dignity, there should be some dignity in death. This is something wonderful that Mother Teresa imparted to our people. So we're all actually so happy and so inspired by the way she lived, the way she ministered, and even now she's a model, role model for our generation. The kids always study about her. So no doubt about that. Now, the question that you asked, whether there was some kind of a pushback, from a small, very minuscule quarters, there was some kind of a suspicion cast upon her. but that is not significant. That's not a big thing.
That's good to hear.
Yes. Yeah, that's not a big... Now, the leaders, now take for example the chief minister of that particular state where Mother Teresa congregation has its headquarters, or where Mother Teresa started her ministry, is West Bengal. Chief minister of that state is so fond of Mother Teresa. So fond of Mother Teresa. She is a woman now, chief minister, Mamata Banerjee. She is so friendly with the sisters of Mother Teresa. And when we had this ceremony to announce her as a blessed in Rome, this chief minister came all the way to Rome on her own, like one of the sisters, without looking for any protections and things like that. She came all the way and sat with the sisters and watched the program and went back. See the kind of love and affection that they showed to Mother Teresa. So this is actually something prevalent everywhere. What you hear is that, you know, she was for conversion and things like that. All those things are from a small quarters, I think. It's negligible. We did not give so much of importance to that, you see. So that way, Mother Teresa's work continues to live very vibrantly in the memory of the contemporary generation. It will continue to live for years to come. You see, that is about Mother Teresa. Yeah.
Has her work spread to other parts of India? I mean, are there other... groups of nuns, you know, taking up that particular her work and her ministry.
Yeah, her work has been, as you know, has been established globally. She has convents across the world, and she dared to go to places which were hostile. Even went to Russia and all these places, some Africa, all those places established. Now what is happening is a kind of a general kind of a development which is happening everywhere, you know, because it is a very challenging ministry. The young ones, many are not taking to it. Number is kind of dwindling, but still there are occasions from different parts. I think we are now getting more occasions, if I am correct, from Africa. And in the Indian context, from the northern states of India, we are getting more and more occasions. But in general, the number seems to be kind of dwindling. So how do we kind of understand it? I think the kind of the challenge that this lifestyle poses. You may know that the Mother Teresa sisters live a very simple life with the bare minimum and things like that. So that is perhaps, you know, pushing the people away. But those who are really dedicated, they take to it, they join the congregation and do it well.
So, a very tough vocation, for sure.
Tough vocation, unlike other congregations, yes.
Well, mentioning that word vocation, is there anything that you want to talk about concerning that topic on vocations? I mean, are there a lot of vocations to the priesthood in India, and maybe you want to comment on the United States or some of the rest of the world?
In the Indian context, reality is kind of, say, multifaceted, you know. In some regions, vocation is growing. In other regions, it is dwindling. To priesthood, to religious life, sisters, brothers. So I should say that, you know, states which have been kind of educated in the secular sense, from there, the number of occasions are kind of dwindling. But other states which are taking to education, which are growing up, from those states, we are getting more in number. And I should also say that congregations which are serving globally are getting more occasions. That must be your experience as well. Now you are getting what we call missionaries from India to United States or to Europe. This is what they call an era of reverse missionary movement. There was a time when missionaries came from United States and Europe to our place. Now they are all coming here. So this is also happening. And you find congregations which are, you know, promoting global ministries. And
is this problem with secularization? Do you think that's an influence from the West, Western cultures?
I should say yes and no. Yes, in the sense, as I told you, the so-called modern education, you know, which does not want to have anything to do with the religion. That type of education, which has also given certain kind of economic empowerment and other things, that seems to discourage youngsters taking to a, you know, religious life, you know. But however, perhaps not in the way in which it is happening in the United States or in Europe. This is a very thick presence of secularity here. So it's very difficult to find, you know, sincere occasions. Of course, it's happening here also. We are getting good occasions as well here. But however, Indian context is not that way. There is a mutuality between what we call religion, faith, and this modern education. If I can give you an example, a Hindu priest who can use the latest modern gadgets but can still practice his religion in the most traditional form without giving up. So these two things can coexist there. So in that way, India has a different take on the interface between secularity and religion. Anyway, if I have to give a overall kind of a picture, India is still doing well with religious occasions, generally speaking, doing well with religious occasions. And the faith of the simple people are still a leading light in the Indian context. I should be happy to say that.
Yes, I'm happy to hear that. Okay. It's a good thing. We could certainly use a lot more vocations here in the United States, as well as in Europe, of course. You know, Europe has become very secularized. And like you were mentioning, France, it was once the flower
of Catholicism
and Christianity. You know, and then it became now sort of a purely secular state.
But I think we're finding, from what I can observe in the United States, that the orders that have kept the tradition and the habit and so forth and not secularized are the ones the young people are really flocking to. Other orders, they've become very seemingly secular, and the young people don't want to give their life up for that. They want a purpose.
I think there's some truth to that. I think they see, you know, in the older traditions a dedication maybe that they don't see in some of the orders that have gone a little bit too modern. Would you say that's true, Father?
Can you say that again for me?
I see that what Lynn was saying, that some of the orders that are going back to some of the older traditions and wearing the habit and engaging in the disciplines and so forth of the older traditions are gaining more converts than more modernistic ones that are more worldly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That is true in some sense in the Indian context as well, yes. So the young religious, what we call personnel, I mean sisters or others, they seem to have a liking for a different lifestyle, including the appearance, you see, including the dress and the patterns. That is true. There is perhaps it has to do with a sense of difference, a sense of identity, you know. A religious person has to show or has to live out, you know, vis-a-vis the secular world, which is kind of dominating everywhere. So therefore, that element is there in the Indian context as well. But however, the other type, say for example, religious nuns who are wearing, say, ordinary, but a different type of a sari, you know, they are also there. They have a lot of easy accessibility to the life conditions of the people. They can go into the lanes and be with the people without, you know, showing oneself to be a kind of a religious in an obvious sense, because there can always be now suspicions and others, you see. But these sisters very unassuming, can have accessibility to people. So that is also there. So I find both existing together. I wouldn't, in the Indian context at least, I wouldn't say that this new type of interest in going back to the tradition is so obvious in the Indian context. It's like kind of both.
Father, there is so much that we could talk about in any one of these topics.
Yes.
It seems we could go on. They are so interesting, and you bring so much to it and so much with you. I just wish I could stay here on the air and talk even some more. We are coming up toward the end of the show. So at this time, Father, I'm going to ask you to give us a blessing, and we'll end the show on that note.
Thank you, Bob, for your good work that you are doing. And I wish the very best for this Spirit Radio. Catholic Spirit Radio. Let you continue to do this good ministry. And as you were saying at the beginning, let this, what we call the secular continent, experience faith through your ministries. So let us pray. Gracious God, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to come over to the studio and share my views with the general audience through the mediation of Bob and his wife and this great radio. All that we do, gracious God, is for your greater glory. All that we do is to spread the message that God loves the world. God still continues to be present in this world as a form of love. And help us to be evangelizers. Help us to be apostles of this message to the entire world in our own simple way. Be with us, guide us, and help us to walk towards that great eternity. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Father, and God bless you for coming here, and God bless everybody out there. Please pray for us. We'll pray for you. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.